accession number 23363, real 8.
Reg Best Tape, Reel 9.
And, the trip on the Scythia wasn't bad, of course. It was interesting. Furthest I've ever been. It's the sort of thing I wanted. Through the port side and the dumb boats coming out to us and on through the Red Sea and across to Bombay.
Had you had to have a lot of injections before you left?
Yeah, we did. I know we had yellow fever. What's that?
Malaria, perhaps?
No, I mean, that's a horrible disease. You get out east. Yes, there were some. I can't remember what they all were. We took them all a bit more calmly than we did the very first injection back in 39, when we had to have, was it, TAB and the other one.
Polio?
No. Never mind. But a couple there, we had to have one, and promptly. We were given 48 hours to go retire to our beds, our billets, stay in bed 48 hours. So, in anticipation of the 48 hours, we used to get a crate of fear and put underneath the bed to see us through. But by the time that 1945 came, they'd realised all these precautions weren't necessary. We had the injections, yeah, but yellow fever, I doubt, at this particular time, because we needed three for that, one after the other. And anyway, we got to Bombay, and we were taken to Dulali, of great renown. Later, they used to speak of Dulali Tap. Which was been off your nut a bit, but taken to Dulali while they sorted us out as to who was to go where in the operation which was apparently being planned against Japan, an invasion of Malaya. We'd heard about it. I thought, well, this is it then. This will probably be the lock, but may as well make it as comfortable as I can. And I thought I'd use some locum. We were taken to see a brigadier, the sergeant, half a dozen of the sergeants, I remember, for interviews. And he asked us what we'd done. And I said, well, I've been with the engineers. And I thought, well, be a good thing to be with the engineers, but with the core engineers, further back away from the hot seat sort of things, which the division was inclined to cop from time to time. And the division's corps seemed a safe time if I could get there. And he asked me what sets I knew. I said, yes, I knew the 3 set, which is the set they used at corps. And it worked. He said, well, righto, well, we'll send you up then to Pune to see them up there, because they're getting ready to go on an invasion to Malaya. I thought, well, it won't be too bad a corps. Whatever they're doing should follow the others in if it's still involved in invasion. We got to Pune and interview again then with the signals chief to see which particular part, and I was allotted to the 34 Indian Corps engineers, to be with the 34 Indian Corps anyway, 34 Indian Corps signals, of course, officially. Although we were to be with the engineers once again on the town. And he welcomed me and he said, oh, you're referred me going on. It's 34 Corps. We're going to be with the Corps to carry out this invasion of Malaya. I said, yes. He said, well, you're lucky. He said, because we're going to post you to the N section. I said, good. He said, and we're so lucky, he said. We've been detailed to be with the advance landing troops to clear the beach. Oh, if ever a bloke's heart sank. Fooled again. You can be too smart. Yes, I got to the end section all right. I didn't know they were going to be put at the front of the invasion. So, back to Bombay. Find the Bombay Ghats, famous route you took in a 3-ton lorry. Boarded the Empire Pride, from which we were to be transferred to a landing craft eventually, when we got to Malaya. And the sappers, we were to be amongst them with a communication. They were to apparently clear the beach. Well, this Empire Pride wasn't exactly a trip of joy, because the F-34 Indian Corps were mostly Indians, and we weren't the best of company on troop decks and all the rest of it. But I mustn't spoil any political correctness for you, but things were different in those days. And they used to get up in the morning and clear their throats en masse on deck. And we clear our throats a bit, but when they do it, they make a proper job of it. First thing in the morning, we used to call it the Indian Love Call. And you get used to that. But as we approached approached Malaya, down the Malay Straits and so on, they were becoming a bit of a nuisance in the toilets, because they were used to the way you put two pads on the ground to use the toilet, and they went and of course they were rather spoiling things for us by standing on the seat to try and achieve the same sort of purpose from their angle. Somebody had tried to solve that with a notice that they put up on the Empire Pride, because we were all very worried about any diseases that might pick up. The main danger out that way was with crabs. You may or may not have heard of. And somebody had put a notice in the toilets there. Please don't stand upon the seat. The crabs in here can jump 6 feet. But it didn't achieve its purpose. Actually, I did. And pick up a whole dose of crabs. And after we got ashore, to try and clear them. But in the meantime, we lay off a beach, Morib Beach, down the west coast of Malaya, and sent our vehicles to Port Dickson, a place about 20 miles further
further down. Half our the whole convoy went on to Singapore to liberate that. Word had gone through. You could see we'd had, sorry, we'd had VJ Day in the meantime, which we celebrated rather, well, not very strongly in a naffy while we were in Bombay. Is it Bombay or Pune? Anyway, one or the other. And on Egyptian style whiskey, not Egyptian, Indian version of whiskey. Which wasn't good. It was no great celebration at all.
Was there a feeling of relief that you wouldn't face action?
Yes, hopefully. Oh, that's so. Yeah, yeah. Except that all the thereafter, the Japs were only surrendering in, you know, certain places. I mean, they covered a wide area, Sumatra, Java, and all those places. And until we got there with some troops, we didn't know whether they were going to surrender or not. Somebody had to go ashore and communicate with our few forces that we had behind the lines there. And so we lay off at off Maori. It was one beautiful sight to see there. Because news did come through that they were going to surrender. And that night they had the order on this convoy, which was extensive. We had a couple of the larger aircraft carriers with it. It was quite a force assembled by Mountbatten, who would have landed us in awful trouble if the invasion had gone ahead with the Japs, you know, still a fighting force, because the people who chose the beach hadn't allowed for shifting sands or whatever there were, and it did turn out the landing craft were getting stuck. We went in a far bit much deeper water than we needed to.
Similar sort of thing to Dieppe then, the Mountbatten operation.
Mountbatten, yeah, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Zipper it was called. Yeah, it's Operation Zipper. And when I was just saying this beautiful sight, it was when the contrary to the normal accepted thing of darkening ship at a certain time, being in complete darkness, the order came through to, I suppose they said, lighten the ship or something. And at this particular hour, all the ships put all on their lights, and having been in blackouts at home and everywhere else for about 4 or 5 years, whatever it was, the sight of all these lights twinkling and whatnot, and everybody pulled down all the blackouts on the portholes and all the rest on the ships themselves, put all the lights on they could. But we still carried out the landing, if you like, as an invasion, because that's the way we'd been. We'd got an awful mess with Bostik, waterproofing all our wireless sets and our gear for landing and anything. Anyway, we were supposed to be ready, but we landed from this thing on an LCI, which was a longish sort of thing, jumping while the blessed Empire Pride went up and down with all our kit. I know it would have been a proper shambles, the panic which might have gone on, and we'd been shelled while we were landing. And then onto another one, and I think a third, before we got onto the LCT, the thing that finally lets its front down, and you go down the ramp into the water, which is normally reckoned to be about a foot or so at the most. Where we went, it was nearly 4 feet. And I had a little chap with me, I remember, with his wireless set, which he tried to hold above his head. But
remember him going down
these would all be
in the hole and
these would all be valve sets, would they?
Yeah, we're taking our sets out of the vehicles because you've gone down to Port Dickson, so as we could operate when we landed, which wouldn't be. And we had to carry quite large batteries for them. Well, it was an ill-conceived ill-conceived affair, really. And then we did a forced march when we landed to sort of get inland towards Kuala Lumpur. And we kept down that night with ants crawling all over us, but we were so tired after this forced march. And we were giving our salt tablets to Indians who were flaking out on the road. We'd taken salt tablets and carried some more with us because we knew, we were going, and myself and most of the others, we were going into a hot country for the first time. Giving our salt tablets to them, and they were sort of falling out on the way of this march. But our little section was together.
How many men did that consist of?
Only about 15 or 20, fortunately. And then when I got there, I found out these crabs. God, man, it's horrible. Oh, they make you eat something shocking. You've seen them. They are like crabs. You can see them. They're little crabs, and they cling to any hairs that they can find. You guess the hairs they're made for. And I went to, there was a medical truck nearby. I went there, and they said, oh, the only thing you can do is sit. We got our medical crew's down at Port Dickson. We've got to wait till we receive it. You can finish up with some blue stuff. You punch yourself with. The only thing you can do is set his shave them off. We got at least one to come behind a banana tree or something. Got me water from the sort of green slummy sort of bit of a lake that was on the edge. And we're in the jungle by this time. First time I'd seen any jungle. And there I was. Cut myself something shocking on the lip with this razor, which was probably wasn't very sharp anyway. I was glad when I did get their truck and they got this blue ointment. It just made all your underclothes blue, but no, there it was.
Yeah. So from the jungle you pushed on?
Yes. We were stuck there on the edge of the jungle, or in the jungle. And but I couldn't wait. I wanted to see what this country was like. Sorry, yeah. I had to go, so numbers happened I this time, because went in our jeep or whatever, into Kuala Lumpur. Passing through a place called Klang, and see all these Chinese women in the jungle, you know, neatly turned out in their pyjamas and whatnot. And then you get to Kuala Lumpur and see the same thing. To a raw recruit, seeing the jungle for the first time, you know, going into a tropical country for the first time, it seemed unreal. And most interesting, we're going to be all right here. They said, told us, first people we spoke to, I suppose, not quite along, oh, you want a bit of fun? Go to the amusement parks. Big towns in Malaya, I don't know if you know, had amusement parks where they performed Chinese opera and things. And the main, and very, rather like a fun fair, but not with roundabouts and things. Singapore had three. They called them worlds, the happy world, new world, great world, which is subsequently became involved with as a civilian later on. Meanwhile, we were told that they must go to this BB, they called it, the, whatever it meant, the BB park in Kuala Lumpur. They said, well, get in a get a trishaw and the chap will take you. Just say you want to go to BB. So we did, we said BB. Well, it seemed a bit odd to call it BB ourselves at the time. And I think we made a few jokes about it. But he sort of pedalled away, sort of to the edge of Kuala Lumpur, up tracks, into more jungle, past Malay kampongs, villages and whatnot, and eventually stopped outside one and pointed to it and said, BB. And some scraggy old tart came out, and it dawned on us then, BB, he thought that, well, you know, we, the troops used to call the girls BB. He thought you probably know that. And it was more of an Arabic term, I think. Anyway, I said, no! Made him pedal all the way back again. I had two of this amusement park, which wasn't bad. And then surveyed the Batu Road, great renown in Kuala Lumpur. Went back until we made an official advance through Kuala Lumpur, stopped at a place called Kajang.
Did you see many Japanese prisoners of war?
Yeah, some. Yes, at this point. Being and making them run. Of course, a bit unfortunate for the people in charge of them, they had to run too. But I don't think we were ever personally involved in handling them. Yeah, quite a few. We took them in. And no doubt they had a downside better time than the way they treated ours, but they might have been given a bit of their own. A dose of their own treatment. And in Kajang, of all things, we set up a minor headquarters, put out a sign, which was Panther this time. And on the other side of the road was another headquarters, proudly displayed as Force 136. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. Very interesting book being written about the exploits of Force 136. They're called The Grass is Green. I don't know, there's something about it being green. Written, I think, by a chap called Spencer Chapman, who was one of just two or three who stayed behind with the Japs in the jungle to carry out sabotage work against the Japs through the war. And one of them chose the site for the landing at Mori, which I think didn't do his stuff quite well, though he had to do it under fire. He was taken off by submarine or something in the end. What was I saying? My thoughts go back to these things and try and make them clear. But, Force 136 were right opposite us. And we made friends with them. And I'll come on to them a bit later. Because they became, subsequently, they went back into the jungle and became the people who caused all the trouble for them, what they called the Malayan Emergency, after the war went on, I think, till 1950 and beyond. Met General Templer and so on, handled it in the end. But at that time, if only they had, it was obvious to me, just given them a nice sum for their arms, they'd have gladly accepted it and gone back with the money, rather than kept their arms and rifles and disappeared, as they did when they didn't get anything. Or they got a pittance, I forget what it was. I mean, we got about 60 quid, the mob money, whatever. We could have given them even less than that.
I've preferably given it to them, because there weren't so many of them that time. They're recruiting more afterwards to against the in the 45-50 era to make us a nuisance of themselves against the British. But if they'd just given them some money, it would have saved all that.
So did you set up a communications headquarters there?
Not necessarily. Not till we got to Ypres, which was to be the ultimate base for the 34 Indian Corps engineers, whose job became, when they got to Ypres, to clear the roads to the other towns, north and south, back to Kuala Lumpur, up to Taiping, and either side of any mines and things and that sort of thing. And we provide the communications for them. And we set up in Ypres, and we got there, took over a house, a civilian house, between the shell blokes, you know, shell company. He'd lived there before. Quite a nice two-story house. It was just enough for a dozen blokes, I had there. Formed their own football team. Quite good we were, practiced hard. And you think of this, see them out in Japan now complaining about the heat. It was jolly hot there. And we used to practice at lunchtime, didn't run about as much as they do in Japan. And we used to come off and shower, and our clothes were wringing wet. Had to put on another set of clothes, and not really wearing football. Worst thing was when the ball went up a tree. Should have been no problem to go up a tree. But it didn't allow for the red ants. Quite long things, a bit long. I used to send a junior bloke up the tree. You can climb trees better than I can, Jock, you go. Swine, yeah. And the welcome banners were out. They used to make fanciful banners with palm fronds and whatnot. Welcome to the MPAJA, never mind welcome to 34 Indian Corps. Who, of course, had been this Force 136. They were the ones that were greeted with open arms. So not to treat them better afterwards is that sheer foolishness. But, Project War was over. No more fighting, we thought. And let's enjoy ourselves, apart from the football. We took over under these worlds or amusement parks. And the one at Ypres, and the main attraction in these amusement parks to us was what they called the cabaret, where they had dancing girls sat all around the floor, and you bought books of tickets, and you gave the girl a ticket to dance with her. 6 tickets for $1, I can remember it still. Yeah, and some of us it's our job to become friendly with the local population, wasn't it? Which we duly proceeded to do. Most of the girls were Chinese and very attractive, I thought. One or two Malays, one of my chaps married a Malay. Yeah. And he didn't gain subsequent in civilian life. He was a